This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. We're in a racially charged period in the country's history, going from a high point, the nation's first African-American president, to a low in the tensions that are mounting over the treatment of black people by some police forces in this country.
It is obviously not the first time that race has been a contentious issue in the United States. Wisconsin native Andrew Marinus looks back at a little-known story from the civil rights era in his recent book. Strong Inside is, on one level, the story of an unsung man who integrated a collegiate athletic conference. But at the same time, it's also very much about where the country was at that point in time and where it's gone since.
It's the story of Perry Wallace, the first African-American to play basketball in the powerful Southeastern Conference, the SEC. Ahead of an event in Milwaukee last summer, Andrew Marinus joined us via Skype from Nashville. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on.
There have been a couple of major stories involving race in really just the last week around the country, between the killings in Charleston and the surreal debate in Spokane. Why would you contend it's important for us to know the story of Perry Wallace?
Well, it's a great question. It was one I was asked many times. It took me 8 years to write this book. And during that time period, people would say, you know, this is an interesting story about, you know, a story that took place in the 1960s. Why is it still relevant today? And over, I would say, you know, race is always relevant, never more so and more obvious than just with the news of the last week. Specific to Perry Wallace, I would contend that he's a figure, sports and civil rights figure, as important as a Jackie Robinson. And just about everybody in America knows a bit about the story of Jackie Robinson. But very few people know anything about Perry Wallace, even here in Nashville, where he grew up and where he made history. And so to be able to shed light on this man's story and the impact that he made in the sports world, but really in the South and in the country, is an important story, and I'm really excited to be able to share it with people.
Right, and so when it comes to integration and pioneers, we often think of 1947 and Jackie Robinson's first game with the Dodgers. The NBA's color line was broken in 1950, and so it's kind of amazing to consider that this story of Perry Wallace and the SEC played out in the late 1960s.
Right, 20 years after Jackie Robinson, and to also put it in perspective, Bill Russell was already coaching the Boston Celtics by the time the SEC had its first African-American player, Perry Wallace. And that's something that was important to me in this book, was to really put his story into the context of the place and times that he operated, the Deep South of the late 1960s, when so much was happening in terms of civil rights. There was so much tension and danger, really, at this time that Perry Wallace was making history on the basketball court. And it was not easy for him in any way. Here in Nashville on campus, the feelings of isolation that he experienced, and then traveling to cities like Starkville and Oxford, Mississippi, or Auburn, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and the concerns that he had, and going to those places, his major concern was he going to get shot and killed out on the basketball court or around town before a game? This was very dangerous territory that he was entering.
Well, and he grew up, as you mentioned, in Nashville in the 50s and early 60s. What opportunities existed for African Americans there as he was coming of age?
Nashville is an interesting city, and this is where I live now. And, you know, David Halberstam's book, The Children, the great book about the sit-in movement in Nashville in 1960, it's not the Deep South here. There's a different feeling in Nashville than there is if you go to Alabama or Mississippi. Yet, I mean, is there a sort of a kinder form of segregation? Not really. So Perry Wallace grew up going to segregated schools. As a young kid, he was sitting in the back of buses, downtown department stores. African-American kids, you know, couldn't try on clothing. It was a segregated town. And so his parents had eighth grade educations. His mom was a cleaning lady. His father was a brick cleaner and a brick layer. But there was a great school in his neighborhood, Pearl High School, and it was really the centerpiece of Black Nashville. Perry was a brilliant kid, and even though there weren't that many opportunities for kids like him in Nashville, he dreamed of a brighter future, and this school helped him prepare for that. He was a valedictorian of his class, in high school, and he saw basketball as a means to an end, as a way out. You know, he didn't have his whole life hopes pinned to sports or to basketball. He wanted a scholarship and to get a real education at a good university. And initially, he thought of coming up to somewhere like Wisconsin or a school in the Big Ten. He was recruited by Northwestern, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa.
Well, but there were plenty of African Americans in college basketball as he was getting ready to graduate. And in fact, the team that had just won the NCAA championship, Texas Western, did it by starting an all-black lineup. And so why did he choose Vanderbilt to that point, which had never had a black player?
Right. The whole league, the entire Southeastern Conference, which had been around since the 30s, had no black players. Well, you know, going back to the last answer, what Perry really wanted out of college was a great education. He goes on recruiting trips up north and out west, which is what he thought, you know, this is what I want to do. This is my opportunity out of the South. But he saw sort of the underside of college sports, which you still see today. He was offered cash on many of these trips. He was offered cars, townhouses, girlfriend for the weekend that he was there on the recruiting visit. And most significant to him, he was told that many of these schools don't worry about the classroom. You know, we'll find the easiest classes for you. You don't have to go to class at all. Just worry about basketball. And he felt that he was going to be exploited for his athletic abilities, and he was not interested in that. So he began to take Vanderbilt seriously. Obviously, a good school. He came on a recruiting visit. He saw athletes actually going to class. He was impressed by the engineering department. And so really, to him, it came down to Purdue University and to Vanderbilt, both with strong engineering schools. That was his primary interest. But with his, you know, his family, his parents living here, and the opportunity to play college ball and for them to see him, you know, those were the factors that really led him to choose Vanderbilt, not to make history. He actually came despite the fact that he would be the first African-American in the SEC, and not because of it.
Well, and he was by no means the only black student at Vanderbilt, but black students were not a large part of the student body. So what was the state of integration there when he's recruited?
Sure. There were only probably about 25 black students on campus. The university had only integrated, period, in 1964. So just 2 years after Perry, 2 years before Perry is recruited. And the reason that that Perry was recruited ties into the whole integration of the university. Back in 1960, the lunch counter sit-ins were happening in Nashville, and it was a graduate student. Vanderbilt's graduate schools had been integrated before the undergraduate schools. It was Reverend James Lawson, who goes on to become known as one of the great unsung heroes of the civil rights movement, was a Vanderbilt Divinity School student at the time. He was leading the students in their nonviolent protests at the lunch counters. And when the administration learned that it was one of its own grad students, the reaction wasn't to thank Reverend Lawson. It was to expel him from the university. It was a tremendous low point for Vanderbilt University from a national media perspective. In the wake of that incident, a new chancellor is brought in, a more progressive figure who opens up the university in many ways, and he was a big sports fan. He knew the role that sports plays in American life, for better or worse, and he knew that if he made a strong statement in the athletic realm, that people would take notice that Vanderbilt was changing. So he encouraged the basketball coach to recruit an African-American player.
And in the end, or in the beginning, I guess, he had recruited two African-American players. As Perry Wallace's freshman year begins, he has a teammate named Godfrey Dillard.
Yes, Godfrey Dillard, I feel, is a very important part of this book. If Perry Wallace is an unknown figure, Godfrey Dillard is a completely unknown figure. He came down from Detroit, and unlike Perry Wallace, who really chose to be part of this integration experiment reluctantly, that was the only reason that Godfrey Dillard came down from Detroit to Nashville, to Vanderbilt. He felt like, obviously, Detroit, an important part of civil rights in American history, but he felt a little bit removed from the action. He thought that in coming down south to Nashville and traveling through the deep south on road trips, that he would have a real opportunity to be a part of the civil rights movement in a different way. Perry Wallace, who had grown up in Nashville, today will say that maybe Godfrey didn't quite know what was in store for him, and he compares him in some ways to an Emmett Till figure coming down south from the north And the results weren't equally tragic as they were for Emmett Till, but it was a very different experience for Godfrey than it was for Perry.
Certainly there was some tragedy basketball-wise because Godfrey Dillard ended up never playing a varsity game.
That's right. And there's quite a bit of controversy about that. He was injured. His coach, when I interviewed him, 40 years later, maintained that Godfrey Dillard just hadn't recovered from his injury, and that's why he was relegated to a junior varsity team. Godfrey Dillard said that there was a lot more to it than that, that it was a politically and racially motivated decision. And then Godfrey, during the period that he was injured, became very involved with the African American Student Association and was an outspoken student on campus, expressing the truth that there was a long way to go on campus in terms of the way the black students were treated. And he felt that there was a pocket of alumni and administrators who didn't appreciate what he had to say, and that he was run off the team for those reasons.
Well, and so back to Perry Wallace, there are a lot of surprises in this book, but it is really sadly not a surprise to read about what Perry Wallace had to deal with in playing basketball games in places like Mississippi and Alabama during his college career.
That's right. And not playing games. I'll tell the story about the Ole Miss. But, back in those days, they had freshman teams and varsity teams. Freshmen didn't play varsity ball. And his freshman year, University of Mississippi canceled both of its games against Vanderbilt rather than play against a team that had black players. His sophomore year, he travels to Oxford, Mississippi. He's the first African-American to play a basketball game against Ole Miss. And this is an incident that's probably the most poignant example of what he faced on the road. Perry is hit in the face during the first half of the game by an elbow that his teammates told me they believed was intentional. He's bleeding from his nose. He's blinded in one eye temporarily. The referees don't even call it. They don't even whistle a stop to the game for him to be treated. So it's not until the next dead ball that the team's trainer and manager are able to come out to treat Perry. And as they walk him across the court to the Vanderbilt locker room, the Mississippi crowd rises and cheers the fact that Perry Wallace has been injured.
Well, and to go back to the comparison to Jackie Robinson, there's this image that people have of, I think it was Pee Wee Reese putting his arm around Jackie Robinson,
yeah.
And there's this kind of heartwarming moment. There don't seem to be very many of those moments for Perry Wallace with his teammates. Not that they're necessarily antagonistic, but there doesn't seem to be any recognition of what he's going through.
That's absolutely right, and it's really puzzling. I get a lot of comments at events that I go to now. Why didn't people step in up and do more? And, the second half of that story about what happened in Oxford, Mississippi gets to that point. So Perry is escorted back to the locker room. At halftime, the trainer fixes up his eye. And as the halftime clock runs down, everybody runs back to the Vanderbilt bench. All the players, the coaches, the student managers, and the trainer. And they leave Perry Wallace alone in the locker room. And he knew what was in store for him as he had to walk through that tunnel and out onto the basketball court, and all these Mississippi fans waiting for him that had been heckling him the entire game. And he said that what would have been an ordinary walk back to the bench for any other player was a long, hellish trauma for him. Today, Perry will say that his teammates, were good and decent guys. These were teenagers who hadn't been through anything like this themselves before, and you can't expect them to be heroes. And it's a very gracious and generous outlook that Perry Wallace has on it. He considers his teammates good guys. Jackie Robinson had teammates in his rookie year that circulated a petition that didn't want to play with him. And Perry never experienced anything like that. Just as you said, he didn't have any antagonism from his teammates, but they never stepped up and offered visible support either.
So Perry Wallace plays all 4 years at Vanderbilt, 1 year obviously on the freshman team. He graduates. Why does it take so long for Vanderbilt to bring Perry Wallace back to campus?
Yes, so he graduates in 1970. It's not until 1989 that he's ever invited back to speak or to be honored in any way, almost two decades. And it's hard to imagine that was actually the case. But what happened was the day after Perry's last game, he sat down with the local newspaper and told the truth about what his experience had been like. And he knew that people weren't really going to be receptive to what he had to say But he told me he felt he had a moral obligation to the people that would come behind him to tell the truth. And he said, what if Lewis and Clark had gone off exploring the West and never told anybody it was a little bit dangerous out there, you know? And so he talked about being kicked out of a church on campus and professors using the N-word in his direction and dormitory doors slammed in his face and what it was like on the road, all truthful things. But the next day that the story ran, the phones rang off the hook at the Tennessean with readers calling to cancel their subscriptions, calling Perry Wallace ungrateful and wishing him good riddance out of town. And that began sort of a period of a frosty relationship between Nashville and the school that lasted almost 20 years.
Well, and this is your alma mater. The book is published by Vanderbilt University Press. What is your sense for how the university views this era of its history today?
Well, thankfully, times and people and feelings have changed quite a bit. So Perry's invited back in 1989. That begins the healing process. A few years after that, his jersey is retired. He's inducted into the Athletic Hall of Fame. They even use Perry Wallace's voice as the voiceover for a season ticket campaign for the basketball team. But, you know, in interviewing the athletic director, the current athletic director for the book, David Williams, he said Perry Wallace is a hero. And he, of course, did more for the university than we ever could have done for him. So, you know, his story is appreciated now. In fact, the whole reaction of the city of Nashville to this story has been extremely heartwarming. It was the mayor, Carl Dean, who asked if he could lead a Q&A with me, the first event here in town when the book first came out. Perry was honored by the Metro Nashville City Council about a month ago, and the first people to greet him at the door when he walked into City Hall were the police chief and the mayor, you know, which was symbolic and significant. A new scholarship has been announced in Perry's name at Vanderbilt. Perry Wallace Courage Award for a student athlete has been created. It's been really heartwarming and quite something to see.
Well, it's a terrific book, and I thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really excited to come up to Milwaukee. I was born in Madison. I've remained a Brewers, Packers, Bucks, and Badgers fan my whole life. When I was 13, I wrote an essay comparing Milwaukee to heaven ahead of Field of Dreams in Iowa, you know. So the chance to come up to Milwaukee and talk about this book is really personally a really wonderful thing for me.
Wisconsin native Andrew Marinus is the author of Strong Inside, Perry Wallace and the Collision of Race and Sports in the South. He talked about the book in Milwaukee back in June.
Marinus is the son of another well-known Wisconsin writer, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David Marinus. You can hear more of our interview at WUWM.com. Incidentally, Perry Wallace went on to a distinguished career in law and public policy and now teaches at American University in Washington.